And speaking of cool events, we are joined now by Scott Washington, Hillsborough historian, for another round of History Matters This Week in History. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine, Aaron. It's just great to hear about the kitten being rescued.
I feel so
much more relief. There was just tension there and then relief.
Well, we just adopted two cats, Brad and I did, about a week and a half ago.
And how is that going?
It's going really well. They alternate between being the most adorable and the most ill-mannered, ill-behaved animals, and we love it. It's great.
Do you have like a chair you use them to train them with or something?
Oh,
you
we know? Should. what we've got right now, we don't have the chair. What we have is like the stick with a string attached to it that we use. One of the two cats has claimed that string and stick and just like picks it up in her mouth and just walks all over the house with it for reasons we know not why, but she's very attached to that stick and the string.
Well, it's a historic moment, in other words.
Yes,
you're marking here.
Exactly.
And in a few years, you'll look back and say, oh, remember them.
Yeah. This is a week of historical stuff. We've got the eclipse that happened on Monday.
Oh, yes.
Obviously, continued protests around Confederate memorials, the Silent Sam protests, which I have a feeling this is going to be one of those things that 20, 30, 40, 50 years from now, we'll look back on this week as historical period in Chapel Hill. And it really goes to show you just like how your personal life can just take over to the point where like these things come and go and you don't really think about them so much a couple of days later because you've got new kittens that you have to deal with, right?
Well, it helps.
That
it
occupies
helps
your time. Yes,
moments,
definitely, right?
Yeah. But, you know, wasn't that a great moment with the eclipse?
Mm-hmm.
America just needed some kind of a national moment.
Even though it didn't last,
it didn't last
a day, but it was real nice that one day.
It was a shining sea, and yet everyone is participating. I knew people up in Nantucket that were watching the eclipse, or at least what they could see of it.
Right.
Which is kind of amazing to think how far this went out.
Oh, yeah, yeah. My parents were, happened to be on, they live in Michigan, happened to be on vacation in Illinois for completely unrelated reasons, but just happened to coincide with the eclipse. So they got to sort of experience that. Not the totality, they were a little bit north of that, but still really cool for them too. And the whole country in various ways. Yeah.
Well, we needed it, I think, after Charlottesville.
Yes.
And this has been a kind of a national moment of reflection to find something that was just positive and fun.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about pro-science.
Yes.
Which is about predictability.
Exactly.
We know when this is going to happen. Isaac Newton, I understood, actually predicted within relatively very narrow margins when eclipses and where they would occur, and which is just striking. That was over 200 years
ago. And I know this is not something I'm going to be able to get the exact details right on. And there is an eclipse in this week in history on Sunday, August 27th. There's a historical eclipse that goes way back to the Peloponnesian War, so 413 BC. But because we can predict eclipses, and because we can, I guess, post-dict eclipses, right? We can reach all the way back in history and say when that happened. We can pinpoint events in history, ancient history, that revolve around eclipses. So I don't know exactly what it is, and I wish I could recall this off the top of my head, but I think we talked about it before, about a month or so ago, the first event ever in history that you can identify the specific moment when it happened, it's because there was an eclipse that surrounded it, and scientists are able to reach back that far.
Well, and the one you just mentioned in 413 BC, that eclipse frightened the forces. They're going to battle, and they say, oops, maybe not.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't that be nice if we had people get to that point and go, you know, we had an eclipse. Let's hold off on the war thing.
Yeah,
wouldn't
exactly. I did appreciate, and again, this is one of those like, which regardless of which side of the aisle you're on politically, this was pretty funny. People last week saying, oh Lord, if you want us to impeach President Trump, just blot out the sun on Monday. Just do that. That's fine.
Well, I think we learned a couple things that I like. That one of them was Nazis are bad.
Yes.
And don't look at the sun.
Yes.
Those were the two things that we came away with.
Yeah. Apparently not all of us, though, as the case may be.
But, you know, it's kind of fun when we look back on Monday, mm-hmm. because that was the date in 1993 when NASA lost contact with an almost billion-dollar spacecraft going to Mars.
Yeah.
And I remember that. It was going, and then they went, oops. And they think, well, maybe it was a fuel line, but who knows? So it just shows you that even the best laid plans can sometimes go
wrong. We'll get it back eventually, right? Yeah. It's on Mars, isn't it? Like, it's there. We
well,
just
we
have to go get it, right?
That's right. Yeah. That's exactly right. That's the date also on Monday in 1959 when Hawaii becomes the 50th state.
Yes.
Which is kind of remarkable, and that really helps all the people who made flags and go, oh, good, an even number. Though, of course, all these territories are saying, wait a minute, we'd like to be a part of that,
mm-hmm.
Puerto Rico or Guam, which is factored
really
in the news.
I really do think that possibly the only obstacle to Puerto Rico becoming a state at this point is that no one wants 51.
Well, all right. What about Guam now? Come on.
Or
you know, that's
Guam
been in the
or
news
any of
too.
Those, yeah. But specifically Puerto Rico, because the statehood movement's been going on there for years and years. And I really think it's because people have this psychological thing of 50 is a nice round number. Let's not change it. We have to combine that with just sort of merging the two Dakotas into one. I think that people will go for that.
That might work. Well, you know, on Monday is also kind of a nice date. That's the date in 1920 when this young baby was born. He gets the name Christopher Robert Milne. His father is A.A. Milne.
Mm-hmm.
And as he grows up, his father observes him playing with his stuffed animals and becomes the inspiration for Winnie the Pooh.
Yep.
Isn't that a great story?
Yeah.
I just think that's a nice... And here we are all these many years later, and we have an eclipse. Coincidence?
Well, probably. Yeah, almost certainly. Huge coincidence there.
Yes. But also Monday is when the movie Dirty Dancing was released in theaters.
Filmed in North Carolina.
Yeah, and there is a Carolina connection, of course, with Lake Lure being used. Mountain Lake up in Virginia is another place where they used that as well.
Did they choose two different mountain lakes to film scenes in?
Apparently so.
Okay.
I've been to the mountain lake up in Virginia, and it looks very much like it does in the movie, except that the lake started draining so that it does not look like it does today.
Okay.
But otherwise, it did at the time when I was there. It was.
Did the lake start draining accidentally? Was it dammed? Was it on purpose?
No,
Is it a climate thing?
It was, they think, accidentally.
Okay.
But then nobody thought, maybe we should plug it in. Because there were people...
We were just standing on the shore going, I just don't know.
Yeah, naturalists didn't say, hey, you know, maybe it's a good idea to plug. They said, no, this is part of nature. And we still need this place to survive. Well, that did not happen.
Oh,
so.
Well.
But speaking of lakes, on Tuesday, August 22nd, 1565... is when one of the earliest accounts of the Loch Ness Monster was reported in the life of St. Columba by another saint, Adamnan, who reported that Columba had an encounter with Nessie.
Interesting.
Now, isn't that fascinating?
Was that one of the three miracles, like surviving an encounter with the Loch Ness Monster?
I don't know. And, that's still a great, great thing to think about.
Yeah.
But Tuesday is also when the Mona Lisa was stolen in 1911.
Yes.
And it was missing for 2 years. Now, we think of that as like iconic.
Mm-hmm.
And to say, we can't find it for
two years,
which is kind of nice to think
about. But the tourist industry in Paris must have just gone in the tank for those 2 years,
right? That's
right.
What did they do? I guess go to the Eiffel Tower.
Go to the Eiffel Tower, which was still in the process of becoming popular at the time. So this week is also sort of serendipity on history. August 21st is Christopher Robin's birthday, also the birthday of Philip II, who was the king who built the Louvre back in the, 13th century,
that.
It's a long time ago. To steal something from the Louvre is impressive, though.
Well, we're not going to give any ideas.
No, Although, if you watch the Thomas Crown Affair, apparently it involves a pencil and disappearing ink. But
or there's the one with Tom Hanks, that movie. Where
the Da Vinci Code.
The Da Vinci Code.
Da Vinci Code was the one that was set in the Louvre. Yeah.
And I'm sure the Louvre is going, oh no, that's the last thing we want to hear.
Yeah.
People wanting to come to our museum to take our paintings.
Everyone just wants to look at the pyramid now. No one even wants to look at the art.
Do not come here to try to case
it out. No.
But speaking
of, accent almost got German there for a second.
That's right.
Like Alsace-Lorraine accent going on there.
Well, and and speaking of things that are French, but we, on August 24th, 1718, is when the city of New Orleans that's the founding date.
Yes.
And it goes through Spanish hands and French hands and American hands, and it still retains so much of that. And of course, we're thinking of the Gulf Coast today with Hurricane Harvey approaching. Not necessarily, but I think New Orleans is going to get some of that outer bands, but it looks like Texas might. But that's the interesting thing on that hurricane is that 25 years ago today is when
Hurricane Andrew
hits Miami.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I remember that. That was that and Hugo were the first two hurricanes sort of that made it into my mind as a young kid growing up in Michigan, which has nothing to worry about ever from hurricanes. But Hugo and Andrew were the two big ones for me growing up. Yeah, that's 25 years ago.
I know, isn't that something?
That's incredible.
That is. Well, you know, I like how they do in down in Australia, they'd be talking about monsoons,
right?
Not necessarily hurricane.
Yeah. I'm learning more and more about weather now that I have going to grad school is nice because then you have friends who come to, or in this case, Rutgers, come to Rutgers from all over the place, like international students, people from all over the country. And then because the academic job market is what it is, they leave grad school and they get a 1-year position in this part of the country and then another 1-year position over here and then 3 years there. And then so every corner of the U.S. and significant portions of the globe now I've got either currently covered or have been covered by some of my friends. So I'm learning about all of these weather phenomena that I'd never heard of before, like the haboob.
No, I don't know what that is.
That's an Arizona thing. Yeah, they've got haboobs in Arizona, which I think are like windstorms, dust storms.
Okay.
Yeah, they're They like clouds of dust will descend on Phoenix, and my friend Mina will write about the haboobs of Phoenix for
wall,
a long time.
Building a wall will not keep them out. Is
no,
that right?
No, it is in fact the wall that is inescapable. This like giant state-sized cloud of dust that just picks up every so often, and it's pretty periodic. But
well,
I've never heard of it.
You know, let's also recall that on August 24th. 1916 is when President Woodrow Wilson signed into law the Organic Act passed by Congress, which created the National Park Service. So when we're thinking of phenomena, you know, it's nice to know and realize that's such an important part of who we are as Americans.
And national parks existed prior to that. There was Yellowstone and a couple of others. But
Teddy
this
Roosevelt
is,
had a large part to do
this
that.
Is looking forward. This is saying national parks are great. Let's actually do more with that and have more and really protect this part of the country that is beautiful and needs to be preserved.
Yeah, and that's why those things are important, whether they're interesting things happening in Arizona or anywhere else in the country as well.
It's one of the good things that Wilson did.
Yeah. That's right. Well, you know, that's another interesting date, August 24th, and kind of going back to colonial times and something nearby, 1774, when 71 delegates are present for North Carolina's first provincial Congress.
Yep.
And William Hooper, a signer of the Declaration of Independence, whose grave is in Hillsborough. Yes, you can, if it's on your bucket list to visit the signers of the Declaration of Independence gravesite, you can go there. But he's actually had convened a meeting of colonists from the Cape Fear region where he had an estate, Finian, and where he was active as an attorney for the crown, but he had been trained by James Otis up in Boston, who was very active in colonial America affairs, saying we need to think about revolution in some way.
Yep.
And so he's the one who kind of gets things going. And mm-hmm. this Congress begins the groundswell that leads to North Carolina leading the call for saying we need to be a United States of America. We need to be a different country.
What a significant thing for these people to come together and form a governmental body that is independent of the royal government. Like,
that's
this
right.
is a separate thing. This would be like us today forming, coming together and forming a body and setting up
That's
rules
right.
and procedures and a written constitution and everything like that, and trying to govern completely independently
That's
of
right.
the U.S. government or the state or the city. And being serious about
yes.
it, like,
yeah.
how huge is that?
Oh, my
what
gosh.
A move.
And in 1771, of course, we had the Battle of Alamance County,
mm-hmm.
and it's Lexington and Concord don't happen until a year later,
yeah.
1775. So
yep.
this is a pretty significant moment in not only North Carolina history, but even American history,
mm-hmm.
as the colonies begin to wrestle with this idea that we need to be thinking differently. Our appeals to reason are falling on deaf ears. And perhaps we need to be organizing ourselves differently because the current system is not working.
Yeah. And sometimes that happens and it's lost to history, as in
That's
the
right.
case of the state of Franklin, which was this week.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
This is one of the great stories. If you ever wondered, we were talking about states and we were
yes.
talking about the 51st state. Well, it could have been
Franklin.
State of Franklin
yeah.
because when William Sevier leads, and let's put this into context,
yeah.
too, that in colonial times, North Carolina stretched from the Atlantic all the way to the Mississippi,
mm-hmm.
encompassing what is all today Tennessee. And that side of the mountains, you know, you get past Asheville, you're climbing it. Well, it just was not getting a lot of good representation.
Right.
So that's when residents in that area declare independence from North Carolina on August 23rd, 1784. And one of the best things they did, it's very short-lived, but for a few years, is they actually negotiate a treaty with the Cherokee allowing colonists to colonize that area.
Interesting.
And that is probably one of the most standing things. But when they brought it to the fledgling United States Congress to be considered as a state, and it was Frank Land, they tried to change it to Franklin in honor of Ben Franklin,
nice.
Who wanted nothing to do with it.
Of course not,
The
yeah.
thing that was, while it got a majority of votes, but it didn't get the two-thirds, and really the tipping point was when they said, well, what kind of currency do you use? And the answer was, well, we trade furs.
Uh-huh.
And that that got just such guffaws that you know, it just could
yeah.
not get the necessary. So it was not.
Yeah. But that actually really is illustrative of something that's a trend and something that just sort of a thread that runs throughout American history,
yeah.
which is this conflict. And you see it now if you look at, I was
yes.
just talking with my students about this on Wednesday in American government class, this divide that you see if you look at, like an electoral map of
mm-hmm.
the U.S., like the difference between reds and blue states, and you can break it down by county,
yes.
you see there's a big difference between the coast and the interior.
That's right.
And that runs throughout American history, and that's because there's a difference in worldview, there's a difference
yes.
in economics, in
right.
the in rural
exactly.
Appalachian North Carolina, trading with furs made sense.
Oh, bartering,
but go to
absolutely.
Washington, or go to Philadelphia, I guess,
oh,
at
yeah.
the time, and they laughed at it, because there
right.
was that big of a divide. You see that today, and this is the case. Like, people in western North Carolina or eastern Tennessee, however you want to identify it, were so completely shut
isolated.
Out from
That's
the
correct.
Coastal government that
yeah.
they really needed their own government.
Well,
I felt
and
they did.
The nice turnaround on this is North Carolina slaps John Sevier on the wrist.
Mm-hmm.
They cede this territory to the federal government, which becomes Tennessee, and guess who becomes the first governor?
Sevier?
John Sevier.
Oh.
Yeah.
Who Sevierville is named after.
That's correct.
I just now made that connection.
Where Dollywood is, yes.
Where Dollywood
ding, ding,
is,
ding, ding.
Yeah. Thank goodness for
See,
that, because otherwise Dollywood.
This is
Dollywood.
How history, we make these connections like, oh my gosh. And right near Sevierville is a little place called Kodak, Tennessee, named it because when they were establishing a postal service, supposedly the tale goes that the people in that area said, can we call it Kodak? Because the Kodak was just coming into being.
Uh-huh.
And they liked the sound of it.
The
film. So this is in the late 1880s. Actually, Kodak's formed in 1888, Eastman Kodak. But this is a right around that time period. And they said, we like that name. And that was the name that George Eastman came up, who, we should say, is also kind of a part of this week as well, because on August 24th, 1891, Thomas Edison applied for a patent for his motion picture camera. But what most people don't know is the reason he was able to do this is because when Eastman Kodak, or George Eastman, introduced the celluloid film, the way to run this through a factory was he put sprockets on there.
Right.
And Thomas Edison looked at that and said, oh, sprockets. Well, I could mathematically figure out taking so many pictures, and it would give the illusion of
motion
pictures.
There you go.
Isn't that great?
Awesome. All right.
More than you wanted to know.
That is This Week in History. History matters. Check us out every Thursday afternoon at 5:30. Scott Washington, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Aaron.